from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Queena Kim, sitting in for Mina Kim. After a series of postpartum health complications compounded by the exhaustion of caring for a newborn child, writer Molly Carrow May felt like her body was betraying her. Like many new mothers, her emotions seesawed between shock, sorrow, and anger, and her relationship with her husband grew rocky with the challenges of parenting. Does this all sound familiar? Probably a lot of you guys are nodding your heads. And in her memoir, Body Full of Stars, Molly Carrow May describes the anger she felt from the medical indignities of childbirth. But she also makes a case that while we might be nodding our heads, women need to talk about this more, about the taxing physical and emotional landscapes that come with womanhood. We've got Molly in the studio with us right now. Molly, welcome to Forum.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I heard that when you were writing this book, you didn't even tell your editor or your publisher that you were going to do it. You just went ahead and did it. Why?
I was really conscious of wanting to have the container of exploring and diving into this topic without anyone telling me what to do or how to do it. And so I created that space, and I felt like something was being channeled through me, and I had to give it voice in the right way. I didn't want anyone to tell me how to market it.
And so I guess if I'm understanding your book correctly, you're afraid the marketing might be like the joys of motherhood and you're going to get through this and everything's going to be fine, because everybody always wants to put this sort of nice wrapping around, you know, your little postpartum experience, but everything was right. Good, right?
Yeah, and I wanted to preserve the rawness. That was really important, because I think as we move away from that birth experience and postpartum experience, we start to forget the rawness, mm-hmm. and I wanted to have it preserved.
And in a way, I think in addition to just being a memoir, you also sort of wanted to make the case that we need to talk about this stuff more, sort of unfiltered and unfettered, and that society has been letting us down by not allowing a space for this honest talk. Can you flesh that out a little bit?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we don't have women and anger in the same sentence. We certainly don't have mother and anger in the same sentence. And we talk about, only now we're starting to talk about postpartum depression. That's becoming a little more mainstream. But postpartum rage and anger is very unsafe for women to talk about. And it needs to happen because it's not uncommon.
And so tell me what your experience was like. You have two children. The first one was, I think, especially sort of traumatizing, if I'm not using too much of a word. Tell me what from that experience led you to start thinking about this book.
My birth was not traumatizing. I was very empowered by it. But my postpartum experience was, in the sense that my body broke down. I had thyroid disease. I became incontinent. My hormones were out of whack. And I didn't expect any of this. And
what were you expecting?
You know, I thought a little sleep deprivation. I thought, you know, it would be a transition of identity. But I certainly didn't think I would be 34 and peeing all over myself. And there was a lot of grief and shock. Compounded by the fact that no one was really talking about it. And that felt like this misogyny that was layered on top of all the misogyny we already experience.
When you did try to share your story with people, what was the reaction you got?
Well, you know, a lot of women saying, you know, that's me too, to use that phrase, or yeah, absolutely. And then some people were very scared of it, or they felt shy and didn't want to go there.
Mm-hmm. You talk about your experience, but also this idea of body literacy and how so many women don't, in addition to just not knowing what happens after childbirth, don't really even know very much about our bodies at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and part of my discovery in this book and the process was, you know, we have a pelvic floor and we should know about this, but most of us don't until we're older or something happens. And that is just a great disservice. And that does not happen in countries like Europe where people learn about it. So, yeah, body literacy is huge. And I think we pass through these hormonal gateways like menses or childbirth or menopause. And these are these opportunities for women to really touch in to the body. And a woman who's in touch with her body is a powerhouse, and it changes the world.
Yeah, well, you sort of touch on it because, you know, this reminds me, I had a friend who was trying to get pregnant and she was in her 30s and she's like, it's just not working. And I was like, well, you know, are you timing it or, you know, with your, she's like, no, we're just having sex whenever. And I'm like, it doesn't work that way. Like she had no idea of her, like of ovulation or her flow or anything. And it really did strike me like,
wow, people just, I mean, I didn't even really know any of this either. Why do you think it is that we're not learning this information that seemingly on the face of it is pretty important, right? Like mm-hmm. having children and how does your body have children mm-hmm. and how to take care of yourself?
Well, you know, the modern woman is very disconnected from her menstrual cycle. And I think part of that, again, is this structural patriarchy that we all live in, and we feel weird about it, and people can't say the word tampon or they can't say blood, and little girls hear that, and so then therefore no one talks about it, and so we have this social system where it's weird to talk about, or women don't even want to have periods, or they don't understand the power of the period. So I think that's changing, though. I think there's more literature out there about how to get in touch with that part of your body. It's exciting.
We're talking with writer Molly Caro May about her new memoir, A Body Full of Stars, Female Rage and My Passage into Motherhood. We'd love for you to join the conversation. We have Molly only till the top of the hour here. And if you want to give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email your questions to us at forum@kqed.org, or post them at kqed.org/forum. If you want to ask, if you're, a new mother and you felt rage, give us a call and tell us why. Or if you have any questions for Molly, give us a call there too. And I guess I wanted to go on to the next question of sort of this intergenerational idea. You sort of went to your mother for some comfort, advice. How did that go?
Well, my mother lives down the road from me, down a dirt driveway. So it was just there. I didn't necessarily have to reach out to her. And it was critical because, you know, when you become a mother, you think of your own mother and your parenting. And it was very comforting for me to have that presence. But it's also triggering because you're trying to avoid all the wounds of your childhood when you're parenting your own child. So, but that's the beauty, right? It's the dark and the light coexisting.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, do you think there is a little bit, there's a factor here that women are having children later and therefore it is more traumatizing to their bodies? And maybe that's why it's taken so long for us as a culture to start catching up to this, I guess, quote, newish trend?
I do think so. I have a lot of people, you know, body worker friends and people in the medical field, and they've all said to me, you know, Molly, honestly, I think if you'd had children when you were 25, most of this wouldn't have happened to your body. Now, do I wish I'd had children at 25? No. I'm glad that the choice, I wasn't that old. I was 34 when I had my first child. But I do think there's a combination of what women are doing, working, going back to work early, all those pieces affects the body's ability to restore itself.
Since we've only got you till the top of the hour here, I'm going to go to a call. We've got Amy from San Jose. Hi, Amy. Welcome to Forum.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say thank you so much for putting this out there. I had an emergency C-section with twins when they were very young, and it really catalyzed the breakdown of the relationship with their father. And only 5 years after that, I read the book, The Red Tent, where, you know, women, their body, and they get together. I'm sure you've read the book. Why are we not talking about it? How do we introduce this to our peers? How do we say, you know, I had bad, awful postpartum depression, and I got through it, and how can I help you? How do we open up that conversation?
Beautiful question. I love that you've read that book, right? It's critical. You know, I think it's just about using language and using it a lot with all of our friends, with men too, with children, with teenagers, and making it common so that people hear about the menstrual cycle and hear about the importance of gathering in community. I think living in these little nuclear enclaves that we create It really creates a problem for the postpartum period because we're not really meant to do that. We're meant to be held by a community. So my big thing is, you know, I think language changes life. And if we can language it and have it out there a lot, then it changes one person who goes to their community and talks about it. So I love that you've read the book, and I love that you're talking to your people about it. That's huge.
How do we approach it with our little boys? My little boys are 11. They're not quite little anymore. But,
Right. You
know, how do we bring this up as a not taboo subject?
And actually, and also, how do we just bring it up to regular folks? Because I'm sure during the process of writing this book, you've been trying to practice this thing of, and I'm wondering, I hate these sort of questions, but like, are there sort of pat things that you can open people up when people are like, I don't want to hear about your period or why are you talking about that? How have you come up with any coping ways?
Well, I think something that does help me is to not take my rage and attack that person, right? And so to just be calm and kind and measured and to say, look, you know, something like Viagra is very funded, but no one knows anything about breast milk or periods. And that's a problem for so many reasons, because guess what? We are the ones birthing the next generation. So if you want a healthy population, you need to pay attention to the mothers. And everyone came from a vagina or from, you know, a belly. And so that's the truth. And I think it's about just normalizing those words again, not being weird or giving them pet names. And with boys, I would say the more you talk about it, the better. You know, girls bleed, and this is why. And this is what that means. And this happens every month for them. And this is a really sacred time for them because of X, Y, and Z. And you, as a boy, have your own rhythms. And so let's talk about the rhythms of boys and girls. And they're both good, and nothing's bad. And this is what makes you who you are, you know?
We are talking with writer Molly Caro May about her memoir, A Body Full of Stars, Female Rage and My Passage into Motherhood. We want to take some of your calls. I'm wondering, when did you realize you needed to improve your body literacy? And what event made you more informed about your body? You can give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email your questions. We're at forum@kqed.org, or post them at kqed.org/forum. We have a call here from Emma in Oakland. Hey, Emma, welcome to Forum.
Hi there. I'm calling in because I am so glad you had an uncomplicated or empowering labor process. I was pregnant with twins and endured 72 hours of failed induction, during which a fellow inserted a Foley bulb, which is a small balloon that they then inflate in your cervix, essentially without consent. And I didn't understand enough at the time to realize that this very painful procedure wouldn't actually, in fact, be mandatory. And it really felt like a violation then and still now. And so I suppose my thought is just more education before and during and after labor as to, you know, what happens and how can we be in more control of it.
Yeah, I'm so sorry to hear that. And I think that's actually strangely common, in the sense that a lot of people have that experience of, you know, birth and everything spins out of control and there isn't consent and these things happen. And I've heard a lot of women talk about this feeling of violation during the labor process. And yeah, the talking about it is critical. And, you know, you get it. And sometimes in a birth class, if you take one, like, this is how to advocate for yourself, et cetera. But how can you really know until you're in it? And I think this is the failure of the system, for all the reasons we know. And also not just the system of birth, but the system of postpartum, because you take a mom who's had this experience, and then where are the resources for her in terms of processing that? Because that's a huge thing and a huge shock. And so, and it's a trauma. And so how does she have the resources to then work through that trauma so that she can feel, you know, revitalized?
I'm wondering, in the process of writing your book, if you were able to suss out different cultures or different countries that might do this a little more differently or even be more open about having these conversations?
Yeah, and I don't know all the stats, but I do know that in many countries in Europe, you know, this support is government funded. So you, regardless of your birth experience, you have pelvic floor care. Mm-hmm. I know in France, and I'm pretty sure in Germany, you go and you are checked out, and then you have physical therapy for your pelvic floor. That should happen for everyone, regardless of your birth. And then, so women then, you know, a year out, feel back in their bodies.
We have a call from Maria from Desert Hot Springs. Hey, Maria, welcome to Forum.
Hi there. Thank you. Hey, I just wanted to bring up, from my perspective, I'm 55 now, but with my three kids and over the span of my life, I've been offered opiates so many different times for various things like my C-section or when I got my molars out, when I had my knee surgery. And it's our society's penchant to just numb the pain and make people believe that they can't handle the pain. Or and I was thinking about the article I recently saw about Germany, how, you know, they send people home and tell them to eat and relax and that the pain will limit you, and that's okay. And I think that, you know, hey, I'm all for universal health care. I think we need more stuff like that. And I just think that over the course of my life, why have we always assumed that women don't have the natural ability to face a little bit of pain? We just want to numb it down. We want to, you know, dry up their breast milk and make them do formula because it's too much to deal with. There needs to be more resources. There needs to be more help for people. That's it.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. I think that, again, this is that misogyny, this disbelief that women have an incredible endurance and resourcing in their body. So it's very much about this disconnection we have from the female body and the knowing of what it's capable of.
We've got some comments here. Carolyn says, my generation, the baby boomers, are much more in touch with their bodies. We had our bodies ourselves to read. My well-worn copy still resides on my bookshelf. Noelle says, maybe the silence is about getting women to become mothers, because if they found out all the bad parts of pregnancy and the postpartum time, fewer women would go through it. I guess, what would your advice be about having children?
Well, it's a great question. And I think there is some silence around it, because I think we are protecting in a way, you know, the uninitiated mothers and fathers, because you want to allow people to have their own experience. But there's a middle ground there, you know, of letting people know. My advice would be, first of all, if you have a partner, you got to address that and come up with a plan, because you are going to take a deep dive potentially into some sort of darkness, and you got to know that that's coming and have a support system. And then, and this is a big one, regardless of how 50-50 your relationship is, if you are nursing, it's not 50-50 for a while, and you sort of have to, I don't know, accept that or reorganize it. And I think that's really challenging for women these days.
Well, you touched on that about your partner or how postpartum can affect your marriage. You write about that. Can you share a little bit about how it affected your marriage and sort of how you worked through it?
Yeah, we in part, it's that I felt like my husband could not understand my body breakdown, and he tried in all the ways, but I needed this validation from him, and I kept trying to give him examples like, imagine if your penis fell off, and then, you know, how would you feel? And he would say, it doesn't make sense. And I felt so aligned with women and so separate from men. And that was very high pitched for me. And so we fell apart in many ways. And the coming back together was sleeping. It sounds real basic, but it was sleeping. And it was trying to knit back this understanding of each other's experiences and acknowledging that they are different. He's never going to understand. I'm never going to understand his either.
And were you able to get sort of into his thought process? You told us what you were thinking during this time. What was going through his head as you're like, you don't understand?
Right. He was trying to help, and I wasn't accepting his help. He was saying, you know, go for a walk. And I was saying, no, I need you to validate me. So his love language was different than mine. And also, he had trauma. So for him, watching my birth, it was empowering for me. It was a dramatic birth, and he was traumatized by that. And so he had his own layer of emotions, which we definitely don't even talk about, the partner's postpartum experience. That's completely under discussed right now. And it is, you know, 1 in 10 men have postpartum depression, and some of that's hormonal. But we don't even talk about that. Hmm. So
I didn't even know that until
totally.
You just told me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Teresa from Richmond on the line. Hey, Teresa, welcome to Forum. Oh, I'm sorry. That's Michael in San Francisco.
Oh, hello. This is Michael in San Francisco.
Yes. Go for it. Sorry.
Hey, thanks, Molly, for this. And yeah, I just chiming in on the kind of the partner's perspective. I think it's when our, you know, during our pregnancy and around childbirth and even sort of in the delivery room, it's a good opportunity, you know, understanding that I will never understand what is actually going on. I think it's important for the husbands and partners to understand that this is a good time, and an opportunity to sort of educate ourselves on as much as we can, but also understand, look, there's a lot of it you're never going to understand, and you just kind of have to be there for it. And the other thing is, especially at the time of childbirth and all of the decisions that are being made and everything that's flying around, that's an important time to be on the same page and to be prepared to be an advocate for your partner when things are happening way too fast to go on. But just really appreciate the conversation. So thanks very much.
Thank you so much. It's so true that that partner has that advocate role. And that's, I think, very empowering to have that job and to do something. So thank you.
Let's go to Teresa in Richmond. Hey, Teresa, welcome to Forum.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what's your question?
So I just actually just wanted to add to the conversation. I'm a nurse and a mother of a 12-year-old boy, and I find that I really take the responsibility of bringing him up correctly, quote-unquote, very seriously. And we watched recently on Netflix, there was a compilation of sex ed videos from the 50s and 60s. And so we sat and watched it together, and we talked about the difference in how the videos or, you know, the movies were then as the sex education is now. But the thing that was really interesting to me was afterward, he asked me, you know, they mentioned boys masturbating a lot, but they didn't say anything about girls masturbating. Do girls masturbate? He said, is that a thing? Mm. And I said, of course it's a thing. Of course women masturbate. And he's like, well, how come, you know, they weren't talking about it? And that launched us into a conversation about women's sexuality and how it's handled in the culture in general and men's responsibilities around women's sexuality. It was really an interesting conversation.
Teresa, I have a question for you. We just had a caller asking how she would talk about these subjects with her young boys. I assume you didn't just start off with the Netflix videos. What was the groundwork that you might have laid to start having these deeper conversations?
So I'm always age appropriate, and I did the San Francisco sex information training way back before I became a nurse. And part of their thing is if you're old enough to ask the question, mm-hmm. you're old enough for an age appropriate, honest answer. Mm-hmm. So starting from way back when, you know, when he would go into out of the closet and there's a box of condoms there and he asks, what's that? And I say, well, you know, and I just give him a real honest, age-appropriate answer. And as a nurse, I don't beat around the bush or I don't, like, you know, give a bunch of flowery answers. I just say, you know, depending on the question, well, you know, babies come from a man and a woman and, you know, whatever the question was, gave an honest answer.
Great. Well, thank you for sharing your story.
Let's
go to the next call, Megan in San Francisco. Hey, Megan, welcome to Forum.
Thank you. Hey, Molly. Thank you so much, first of all, for writing this book. I'm so excited to read it. Mm. I have a 3-month-old baby, and so it's very topical for me at the moment.
I bet.
Yeah, but I was really curious, too. You touched briefly on nursing, and I found that right after, I found my birth experience to be really empowering as well. And then quickly after, we went into the postpartum kind of nursing piece, and I'd taken the classes before. I felt very prepared and excited to nurse and ran into problems, which I've since found out is not uncommon, but I had heard really nothing about that except that, you know, it would be a struggle and hurt and things like that. And I was just curious, I know everyone's experience is different, but I was curious, you know, what your experience with what you've heard about postpartum as it relates to nursing and perhaps how we can prepare women better than we currently are?
Great question. Yeah, for me, that I was lucky. You know, nursing didn't create a lot of complications for me, but for many of my friends, it did. And, you know, I have a friend who it was painful for her the whole time. And I think when we talk about nursing being, quote, natural, I think that's complicated because then women think that they're failing if, you know, their nipples hurt or if the baby can't latch or if the baby has a tongue tie or all of these pieces. And, you know, I think in traditional cultures, which we all came from, you had women, you had mothers and aunties and grandmothers showing you this. But if you don't have, we don't have that. And so you have to rely on a lactation consultant or a nurse or someone to show you. And some women don't have that resource or that support. And so they expect they just stick their baby's head on their boob and it's going to work. And I don't think it ever was that way. I think we always had the support. So it is, I think, about demystifying this idea that it's just going to be easy and allowing the support in.
We've got another call from Amy in Mountain View. Hey, Amy, welcome to Forum.
Hi there. Hello.
Hey, yeah. Hey, you're on Forum.
Hi, Molly. Thank you very, very much. So first, I just wanted to say that I really did give birth the first time, and I truly did buy into this cliche, or it really was the cliche that I had my daughter and really did, like, I didn't think that there was anything, like, you know, it was the easiest birth, and then afterwards, it really, everything hit the fan, and I don't know what, I didn't, you know, like, I didn't hear anything from my mom, you know, nobody told me anything is what I'm trying to say very, like, not eloquently at all, and I didn't say anything to anyone, like, I was just struggling inside, and I think that's where the anger sort of came from, and then the second time around, you know, there were no resources in the Bay Area of all places. There were just no resources for me at all. And so the second time I gave birth, thank God, at El Camino down in Mountain View. And there was a pamphlet that just said, you know, 10 questions of, you know, answer these questions. And I don't know why I was honest this one day. And, you know, 2 days later I got a call back and it said to come into this, you know, mother's workshop, and I did, and it changed my life. You know, like, it was a mother's workshop down at El Camino for postpartum depression and rage, and I, you know, this person that wanted to put on this perfect persona have, you know, serious anger issues and rage, and, you know, had a horrible case of postpartum depression, and found out my mother did too, and hadn't told me because she didn't want me to think there was something wrong with me, and that's, you know, she had postpartum depression with me and didn't tell me because she didn't want me to think that there was something wrong with me during the birth process, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and Molly, is that something that you hear from folks, that they want to keep, this has been flicked at before, they want to keep information so that they don't scare people off? And just real quick.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's our responsibility to pass the information on, mothers to daughters, aunties, all around, so that we can help heal each other.
We've been talking with Molly Caro May. She's a writer and author of Body Full of Stars, Female Rage, and My Passage into Motherhood. Thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And I'm Queen Akim, and you've been listening to Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.